the biggest thing is that we make the fans look forward to the following season. I mean, that's the simplest terms. There's a huge opportunity, but you know, there's a lot of things that we could screw up and like derail our success. But you know, I mean, we want this to keep continuing, and the first few years are going to be the hardest. And so I think everyone is rooting for us, but it's really our opportunity to lose. You know, we've made so much noise with all of these announcements, especially over the last 6 months, getting people excited for the season. But it's our responsibility now to execute with the precision and the high quality product that'll keep the fans wanting more.
Welcome to another episode of Japan Forward's Sports Look, Sports Talk, everybody. Hello from Tokyo. It's 10:30 p.m. We have a special guest today, Matt Bayer, CEO of the East Asia Super League, which will be having its inaugural season coming up this fall, starting in October and continuing until the spring of 2023. Matt, welcome to the program, and thank you for taking some time out of your summer vacation. I believe it is your relaxation time to join us.
Oh, thank you, Ed. I mean, we're hustling. We have our season in 2.5 months, so it's far from relaxing. But it's I'm just currently in the U.S. and doing some of our preparation work, especially on our content right now here, as we are really excited to tip off our home and away season format on October 12th. So thanks for letting me come here and be a guest.
Okay. Before we really touch base about the content and the season and the format and some of those details, let me ask you a very basic question. What is your first memory of basketball? And when did you sort of decide you wanted some, you know, career path that maybe involved the sport? Were they sort of connected?
That's a great question, and I don't think anyone's ever asked me that. So, my first memory of basketball, I think it would have to be when I was about 5 or 6, and my cousin was in a Nike commercial, and I thought that was super cool. So yeah, that would have been around 1990, and he was dunking on the hoop on the side of his garage with some of his teammates, who were all like some of Oregon's top players, which is where Nike's from. I always thought like my cousin who in objective fairness was a much better basketball player than I was, like, you know, what he could do on the court. And then what I discovered after watching the NBA and whatnot was awesome. So I was always hoping for an opportunity to work in sports, but I never really saw that I would have an opportunity until I was able to work with the Milwaukee Bucks as the interpreter for the Chinese player Yi Jianlian in 2007.
Well, first of all, tell me where you grew up, and then briefly, can you describe your career path leading up to that opportunity to be an interpreter for the Milwaukee Bucks player, but also, you know, you've had extensive time overseas living and working in China. And some of those experiences obviously have prepared you for this East Asia Super League. So give our listeners, please, a little introduction to where you're from and just what you've done with your life, please.
Yeah, sure. So I'm from Milwaukee, Wisconsin. Grew up in a family of 4 children. I'm the oldest. 2 of my siblings are adopted from China. My family adopted them in 1996. And so that was really like when I was 10 going on 11 years old, that had a really interesting experience going to China for that, and like getting interested in China and having Chinese siblings. And after that, it really opened my eyes to that part of the world, because if anyone knows anything about a place like Wisconsin, you would know that it's not really a place where, young Caucasian kids dream of moving to China. So, I grew up when I was 17, we took a family trip with my brother and sister to sort of look at more of where they came from and us to revisit old friends there. And mm-hmm. at that point, I knew that I wanted to move to China. And that after I graduated from high school, I deferred entrance into the University of Chicago, where I really wanted to go. I did my first year in China, and then I did another year and deferred another year at University of Chicago. And then eventually decided I didn't want to go to University of Chicago. And I went back to University of Wisconsin to finish my degree in Chinese literature, journalism, and East Asian studies, focusing on Chinese politics. And then when I was in my last year at UW, Yi Jianlian got drafted by the Milwaukee Bucks. So that was fall 2007. Mm-hmm. And at that time I was interning for a PR firm in Milwaukee. There was news that was coming out about Yi not wanting to go to Milwaukee. His agent wanted him to go to a big market. And so my boss was very close with the Milwaukee Bucks, and he ended up getting me an opportunity to present why I would be the best interpreter for Yi Jianlian, but also I would write reports on the situation, why Yi didn't want to be drafted. And I would send them to my boss, and he would send me, he would send those on to the team. And I would translate the news from Chinese into English. And this was like the only way the team was getting news about what was happening in Chinese news about this situation. And so for a long time, his agent said, you know, he's got perfect English. He's going to be great when he gets to the NBA, et cetera. He's not like Yao Ming. He doesn't need an interpreter, blah, blah, blah. and he arrived for, I believe, like 2 days. And then I got a call from the president of the Milwaukee Bucks asking me to come in for an interview. You know, I was looking like a pretty typical university student at the time. And so I lined up at the barbershop, got a haircut, drove as fast as I could to get to the training center for the morning practice. I met Yi. I translated for him for an interview for ESPN. And at that time, too, I mean, just think back to 2007, Yao Ming was still in the NBA. There was sort of an expectation that there would be a flow of Chinese players into the NBA. The Olympics were in Beijing the following year. And so there was just a lot of excitement around having a Chinese player and having Yi with the team. And so I got hired. I went to all of the games, road games, most practices, a lot of different types of sessions with insurance providers, doctors, you know, et cetera. I also helped the team maintain their Chinese website. And I also would be sort of the go-to guy if a Chinese sponsor would show up and, you know, want to meet, I would be the interpreter for that. So I was basically just everything China related for the Milwaukee Bucks. And it was pretty awesome. Then I was going to school at the same time. So I would drive frequently back and forth to Madison, Wisconsin, which is about an hour and a half away. And so, I mean, I would sometimes show up in my apartment, also be a lot of times on the team's private plane, flying around, going to NBA games. It was pretty awesome as a 22-year-old. So after that point, I realized, like, you know, if I'm going to enjoy my life and my career, like, this cannot be the pinnacle at 22. So I've got to keep really, really, you know, figuring out like some cool job stuff. So, after that, I moved, to Beijing to, begin my working career. And I worked at Edelman Public Relations. I worked at Weber Shandwick Public Relations, which were, great jobs, but definitely not as cool as the NBA. And then I left Weber Shandwick, and I left with my bosses, and we started our own firm, which is Northhead Public Relations, and worked on a lot of like lobbying, public policy analysis, a lot of things related to energy, finance, trade, and that was really, like, for me, it was great because I always wanted to be in a startup. And so it was cool. But then there was never really an opportunity for me to hone my sports skills. And even though my boss was really encouraging of me following my pursuits. And so I would take, at that time I was taking a class at Beijing Sports University for being a sports agent and, just learning. And then I tested to be a sports agent. I took the test from the General Administration of Sport in China. I was the only foreigner to take that test. I'm the only foreigner in China right now to still have that license. And then I also took the China Basketball Association specific. It wasn't really a test at the time. It was a screening where I was basically interviewed by all of the senior government officials about, you know, what I've done, why I want to be an agent, et cetera. And that was out of a group of about 40 people. And there's three of us that got the license. So, you know, I got another license and then I started to go to work in 2011 full-time, full-on in 2012, running my own agency called Altius. I left my job at the public affairs PR firm, Northhead. And then I embarked on my own journey, which has been building sports businesses since then. And so quickly, I took a lot of the principles from the PR agency and from like what I learned in policy analysis and all of the clients that we would interact with, whether it be sports brands like Nike, Adidas, Li Ning, et cetera, or from the different types of industries that we worked in. And I tried to like take a different approach to the sports agency industry and really an information driven approach. You know, that basically, you know, we weren't trying to do like a sales pitch of players, and be smooth or do things, you know, too flashy. We were all about content and really helping to identify the needs of the teams, what types of players they want, and match them with the right players. And we became very successful, had over 40% market share in the foreign players in China, and a lot of times over half of the foreign coaches. And then basically around 2014, after in like 2 years time, we captured this massive market share. Like it was already, I mean, in our first season of doing deals, 2012, we were already at like 35%, then 2014, like over 40. And then, you know, at times we'd like touch 50% of all the foreign players in the league. And then we started representing Chinese teams that wanted to go abroad for different training. We were representing younger Chinese players that wanted to go abroad for training and for playing at different clubs in Europe or, you know, other more amateur type situations. And, you know, looking at ways to diversify the agency. And so one of the things that we realized is like it's sports agency, those transactions are a very high value and you make a lot of money from just the transaction volume, but like it's a very hard business to scale. And so that's when East Asia Super League made a lot of sense, because it's like you have all of these very developed leagues in Asia. You have fans that love basketball. People get extremely passionate about the national team competition, but then there's nothing really after the national team competition or, you know, on the professional side. And like, this is just a huge opportunity. Why has no one figured this out? And why is FIBA not doing it? And why are the leagues themselves not doing it? Why is this big sports brand not done it? Why is the NBA not done it? And so spent like 2016 with my partner and co-founder, Henry Cairns, who's our CFO, going around to all the different markets and doing, you know, due diligence. And by the middle of 2016, we started to set up our first single site event, which was in September 2017 in Macau, the Super 8. And that's when we brought together 8 teams from mainland China, Japan, Korea, and Taiwan together. And then we, after that, we were approached by the Sports Bureau of Macau because we had our first event in Macau at the Studio City Casino, which is was our partner for operating that event. Then the government approached us and asked to partner. And so they became our biggest sponsor. And we did three events together with them, two in 2018, one in 2019. And by October 2019, that event, we had 117 million viewers on 39 different broadcast networks. And then the pandemic came and we focused our efforts on getting our long-term agreement with FIBA, the global regulator of basketball. We have a 10-year exclusive agreement to operate a home and away Champions League that's integrated into the domestic seasons of the different leagues. And we also have agreements which span from 5 to 10 years with the different domestic leagues for operating this league exclusively with their partnership as well. We're starting with eight teams this fall, and we'll scale to 16 teams in season three.
Let me pause you there for a second. That's a great introduction and a great explanation about the evolution of your career and seeing the opportunity for a niche to be created within basketball. And with the establishment of the East Asia Super League, first of all, as a tournament-driven event, Super 8 for two seasons, Terrific 12 for two seasons, what impressions did you have from those first early tournaments with eight different teams, you know, different styles of play, different fan bases, different media bases? Maybe those first 2 years, and you saw the growth and potential before the agreement with FIBA was hammered out. And I want to ask you about that in a minute, but what was your initial impressions, you and your colleagues, when you saw what was taking place in Macau and as it was being driven, you know, by commercial potential and by fan potential?
Yeah. I mean, I just saw that there was something special about our games in terms of the rivalries on a regional level and the curiosity of like these leagues and these teams that have never met each other. I mean, many of the top players meet each other in national team competition, but it's like, if you look out of the eight teams which are playing in our first season starting this October, there was only five players on the national teams in the Asia Cup just now. And like, that means there's a huge base of players in all of these places that have never been exposed to each other in a game setting. And the fans have never seen them play in that setting. So there's just so much low hanging fruit in terms of things that have never been done. And the like, all of the new elements you can see on the court, but then all of the storytelling and the experiences that happen off the court. And it's like, you know, this is just like an entertainment machine. So that was kind of my first impressions.
I want to read you a very brief snippet of a quote from FIBA Secretary General Andreas Zaglis, who, when the agreement was reached that you mentioned moments ago about the 10-year partnership to, you know, to host the international tournament during the season with EASL and with FIBA, the FIBA Secretary General said, "The recognition is based on a shown commitment to developing basketball in the region, a shown commitment to developing basketball." From a brand recognition standpoint, how important is that statement coming from FIBA's, you know, executive?
I mean, I think it's very important. And I mean, I think that they really held our feet to the fire for several years before they decided that we were the right partners for having this exclusive license. I mean, I made over 15 trips to Geneva and Beirut between fall 2017 and March 2020. I mean, I was flying in and out of Geneva from Asia in the middle of the beginning of the pandemic when, you know, and then I left Europe like literally before all of the borders shut down. And, you know, I mean, it was just like, everything kind of happened in this progression where we were like working up to this point of getting the deal starting from 2016 until basically we had to go home and hunker down behind Zoom and knock these agreements out. So I remember very clearly at the time, at the end of 2019, I'm like, man, I'm exhausted. Like there's days where I would spend like over a 6-day period, like three continents. And I didn't know kind of why I was being driven to do this travel in that way at that time. And I was just like, this is exhausting. But at the same time, like it felt like there was some reason for it. And then the pandemic struck and then we all went to our desks and knocked out these agreements. So, you know, I mean, I feel like this was meant to be, you know?
You know, it's exciting to see the energy that your staff puts out there in social media and in news reports and in videos. There's a clear passion across the board from the team you have in place. Don't you agree?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I have the best team ever. None of this would have been done without my team. You know, I think like, you know, I have some inherent gifts. There's a lot of things I don't know. And that's why I'm like, you know, just so grateful for having the team around me and to understand that, you know, this is a long-term grind to get where we're going. And, you know, the journey continues. I couldn't be blessed more with a better team. I mean, it's our backbone of how we operate. And you know, if you look at like the core team, so many have been from the beginning, like from 2016 or 2017. I mean, it's everyone has the same dream.
Let's talk a little bit about the inaugural season and the concept behind the scheduling and the format. Just give our listeners, please, a little rundown on how it works, who the teams are, and what the grand conclusion is coming up in the spring.
Yeah, sure. Well, the format is that we have 8 teams in total. They're split into 2 small groups of 4. The teams play home and away within their small group. And then the top 2 teams in each small group qualify for the final 4. And the games start playing on October 12th. We have a early and a late game every Wednesday. And we take a break for FIFA World Cup and also for the FIBA windows. And then we have our final 4 from March 3rd to 5th, which is going to be in Manila for the first year. And it'll rotate around on an annual basis. I think it's very likely for year 2 that we're in Okinawa and then year 3 in Macau. And then we'll just keep rotating around. And in season 3, 24-25 season, we expand to 16 teams. And at that point, we're going to have new geographies involved in the league too. So the teams are, we have champion and runner-up from Japan B League. So Utsunomiya Brex together with Okinawa Ryukyu Kings, and we have SK and KGC from the Korea KBL. We have the champion of the Chinese Taipei or Taiwan P League. We have the champion and runner up from the current Philippine Cup, which is going on right now in the Philippine Cup or the Governor's Cup? Whatever is going on right now, we have the champions from this current cup happening in the PBA. And then we have our China team, which is the Bay Area Dragons, which is a team that East Asia Super League is seeding. And we just had an exciting announcement today about our import players. Miles Powell, who was with the 76ers, and Andrew Nicholson, who's been a veteran overseas, including China and Korea for many years, as well as played formerly in the NBA. Those are our players. The reason we are seeding the Bay Area Dragons is because, as many people know, with the COVID-19 border controls that are happening in China right now, it's impossible to have teams playing home and away in our format. And so they will join us in season 3 when we make that expansion, and they will join us in a big way. And we're very excited for that. And like I said, too, there will be more geographies as well at that point.
One thing that impressed me about the vision of the league is also the people involved who are big names on a global basis in the sport of basketball. You know, we're just talking about the Bay Area Dragons a minute ago, and the first coach in team history is a global icon as a coach, Brian Gorgian, you know, longtime coach in Australia, national team coach, several years of successful teams in China, you know, six-time champion coach on three different teams in the NBL in Australia. That's the perfect coach, I think, to lead an expansion team, wouldn't you say?
Oh, yeah. And he just did it with the Illawarra Hawks for two seasons and took them to the semifinals, like a team with one of the smallest budgets and like, you know, a bunch of guys that like, you know, some of them, you know, I'm not really sure where they found him, but he made it work. I mean, Gorgian's the best coach outside of the NBA. And I would argue that he's much better than many of the coaches in the NBA. He was a client of mine for many years in my agent capacity. And on top of that, he's one of the best friends that anyone in the world could ask for. He's a great person, extremely loyal, you know, patient, empathetic. He's just a great person. I couldn't be happier to be working with him on this.
We're happy to hear that. That's a positive development, of course. And we'll see how the team does and, you know, just how other teams are, you know, kind of matched with him.
Yeah. He's awesome. So let's, I'm totally confident this team is like a semifinals China Basketball Association level team. And I think that's going to be proven throughout the season. And I hope we do more than that, too.
You touched upon Yao Ming quite early in our call and, you know, and sort of how the attention given to him and in China with basketball was pretty huge. Now, his agent for his career, many years, Bill Duffy, is, you know, he's an advisor to the EASL and he's listed as an investor. Can you talk about how his, you know, his gravitas and his knowledge of basketball and just the business can certainly be an asset for your organization and for the league as it grows?
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's here who understands the sports agency industry would understand that it's an industry full of a lot of very, you know, not the best people. And, you know, like there's a lot of people that are gravitate towards it for various reasons, which usually do not contribute to making someone a better person. Bill is... again, like Gorgian, just one of the best people I know in my life. I mean, I feel like him and I working together is like one of the most synergistic relationships that I've ever had in a working capacity. I mean, he advises and mentors us and gives us connections to various parties, whether it be players like Steve Nash, who were co-producing our long form reality series, or the CEO of a major restaurant chain for a sponsorship, or a brand lead at an athletic apparel company for our uniforms for the Dragons, or to just counsel on, you know, ideas for the development of things, or, you know, helping us with different strategic alliances and investment for the league. I mean, the guy knows everyone in the industry. He has a great reputation. He gets stuff done and he just has great character. You know, he has five children. He has a very lovely wife and, you know, they like, I think like he works from the same mindset a little bit that I do. It's not like, you know, your work and your life are separated. It's like your work is part of your life and in the fabric, and you want to enjoy it and to integrate the values that you take to your life as much as possible within your work. And, you know, so to be around someone like Bill Duffy, who, like, you know, as people and as professionals were completely aligned, and then to see someone who's done so much as him and to have him add so much value into the business, like continually, it's sort of like, you know, this, well, that's springing from the ground, and it's just pure nutrition that comes out of it. And that's what working with Bill is like.
Okay. Thank you for sharing those details and very honestly and eloquently pointing that out. Now, in terms of also growing the recognition and the awareness of the league existing, how important is it to have the NBA in some capacity involved? Former players, for example, I know among the early investors are Baron Davis, Meta World Peace, and Shane Battier. How helpful is that in, you know, like word of mouth and just growing the brand recognition of the league?
Yeah, well, I mean, it's incredibly important. And, you know, it's funny, like, I've known Meta for over 10 years and like, he's a great guy. And, you know, we're together in LA, like, what was it in the middle of June. And we just said, hey, you know, you should come next week to Manila and for our ceremony of assigning the teams in the small group. And he just said, yeah, I'm there. And, you know, it was like he did it because he's invested in the league and a supporter. It wasn't to make money. And, you know, that's not only that he believes in the vision and stuff, but he treats us like friends, you know, and he realizes we're on this journey together. And Baron, the same thing. I mean, I ran into him at Las Vegas Summer League 2 weeks ago, I was headed to the bathroom in a restaurant and he was there. And then, you know, immediately hug, let's go do this together. Let me introduce you to my teammates from UCLA, Matt Barnes, and, you know, all these other guys. We're slapping hands with, you know, Deputy Commissioner Mark Tatum in the hallway and stuff like that. I mean, it's like, these guys just, they're so well established, but they have so much passion for, you know, what we're doing. And they've all experienced Asian basketball mostly through their relationships with Chinese shoe companies or being teammates with Yao Ming and whatnot. And, you know, they understand like how big the potential is for the market and like where it is. And they've experienced it in a way where it's been meaningful for them financially. So to see an on the court product that's committed to elevating the game and like doing it in a professional way, I think that they really want to be a part of that. And just like to have their backing and support and friendship through this it's amazing.
I can only imagine that's absolutely the case.
For sure. Yeah.
What do you hope in the simplest terms the EASL accomplishes in its inaugural season?
Well, I think that the biggest thing is that we make the fans look forward to the following season. I mean, that's the simplest terms. There's a huge opportunity, but you know, there's a lot of things that we could screw up and like derail our success. But you know, I mean, we want this to keep continuing, and the first few years are going to be the hardest. And so, I think everyone is rooting for us, but it's really our opportunity to lose. You know, we've made so much noise with all of these announcements, especially over the last 6 months, getting people excited for the season. But it's our responsibility now to execute with the precision and the high quality product that'll keep the fans wanting more.
When you had the recent, you know, ceremony in Manila last month, mm-hmm. What was the general buzz among the key leaders in the different leagues and the basketball executives? Are they really sharing the same enthusiasm and passion that you know is obvious within your office?
Yeah, I mean, totally. I think everyone was super pumped. It actually, when B League Chairman Shinji Shimada came on and said that he thought the B-League team was going to be the champion of the league, it sort of turned the whole atmosphere into one of these UFC fight weigh-ins. And, you know, it was just fun. Like, we're all sitting there at the podium, great setup, 200 people in attendance, over 50 media. You know, it's what people needed to have after, like, over 2 years of essentially being locked up and no sort of international engagement like this. And, you know, we learned a lot of stuff too about, like, what's how even operating that ceremony with on that scale, what we needed to do to get ready for our games. And so it was also important for us, EASL as a team, to bring everyone together and all these colleagues, you know, 50% of my colleagues I hadn't even met in person, and to put names with faces and for people to be together and to share some laughs and to, you know, have some people get stressed out and, you know, whatever, and have to work through problems together. I mean, these are all important experiences, even if, you know, they might individually analyze seem minute.
I saw an interview that you did, Matt, with Bloomberg TV back in December last year. Mm-hmm. I think it was about 5-6 minutes long that the video was archived online. Mm-hmm. And the host is a bit skeptical about the league and sort of the timing of it, and, you know, the challenges of trying to have international travel during the pandemic and restrictions, etc. But one thing that you hammered home, the point was that in Asia, you know, things are going to open up. And when they do open up, you know, people are obviously, hungry for entertainment. And I liked one of the quotes that you said directly. This is your direct comment. You said, people want local heroes in their markets. And I think that's an important point, because in building a new league, a regional league, it has to be a grassroots level, locally, regionally, and also at the national level to drive media. So I want to ask you, can you talk about the EASL's robust social media and online presence, along with traditional media, and how all those things are working together to help you promote local heroes throughout the region?
Yeah, I mean, our social media machine is, I think it's probably the function of EASL, which is, kicks the butt of most sports leagues, and also is probably the best functioning unit within our company currently. We've spent basically since March 2020, when it looked like the pandemic wasn't going to go away right away, until now, focusing a ton of effort and resources on that, because the whole issue for us was really, like, you know, by October 2022, we will have spent, that would be 37 months at that point. So 3 years and 1 month without really any, on the court competition. And so, being able to engage people through that type of a hiatus without actual games is, like, very difficult. And so all of the credit goes to the team about trying to find ways to engage fans. So much of it on the short form content is focused around highlights and, what have players done, and doing, like, having an educational element to it that goes cross market. But it's also about packaging these memories of the game for fans in their own domestic markets in a way that's different than what the domestic leagues are doing. And so that's an element of it. And then another element of it is really telling, like, the behind the scenes stories, like, it from an entertainment personality driven perspective that gives the fans, something that is, that's different than what they've seen before. It's not just the players go on the court, play, go home, we write a wrap-up report, and then we see them next time they're on the court. It's like, who are these people? Why are they there? What are their struggles? What are their stories? What makes them happy? You know, do they have a family? Do they like to collect something? Do they have a restaurant for that they operate as their side business? You know, let's find out about these people. And that's been a big part of what we're doing. And that's what's led us now to where we're doing this, you know, multi-million dollar production of this long form series that's 10 episodes, 40 minutes each. And we're really going to go deep and high production value. I mean, this is going to be the thing that I really believe is going to put EASL on the global map more than even the basketball product itself, because we're going to be captivating the hearts of anyone who likes a good story anywhere in the world.
This docu-series you're talking about, where will people be able to watch it?
So we are still in the midst of sales discussions with various platforms, but it's going to be a Netflix, Prime, Disney Plus, something, a global streaming service like this. And in certain markets, where we are, certain core markets, we may package it together with our broadcast rights, so that it's just added value to those deals that we have. And those are still under negotiation right now. So people are going to be able to see it in a way that's very natural and convenient to them on a streaming service or on their best indigenous content provider in their market.
So we'll be looking forward to upcoming announcements about that in Japan and other countries nearby. And people that are outside those countries that are in the league, I'm sure there are a lot of basketball fans will be interested who are based in Europe, you know, United States, or, you know, Australia, et cetera.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Quickly, from a logistical standpoint, can you explain the format of the games? Will they be all FIBA rules, and will the referees all be assigned from the individual leagues to help out for, you know, on Wednesdays, for example? Will they be assigned from the B League to work maybe a non B League match, you know, teams from other countries, or how will the game officials and like the stat crew be set up?
Yeah. So the way that we're operating from a technical perspective is that's really where we draw down on our important partnership with FIBA. And FIBA provides the officials to us. So that includes game commissioners and then also the referee crew for the games. And they'll be assigned from all over the FIBA Asia zone. So that includes 44 countries and territories. And so the local league, like if it's a game versus the, you know, Ryukyu Kings and then Fuban Braves in Taiwan, the referees will not be from either of those geographies in order to avoid conflict. And so that's from a technical perspective, really, like FIBA will be heavily involved in that. And I'm sorry, there was another part of the question too, which I forgot.
Oh, I was basically driving home like the stat crew and then the officials, but also FIBA rules.
FIBA rules. Yes, it'll be FIBA
international,
rules.
The international game.
Yes, everything will be FIBA rules. That's correct.
When you think of basketball in Asia and the development of basketball, how significant is it to have this kind of structure in this league, both for teams that are involved, but teams that are not involved, to give them a, you know, a target, a goal? You can say, for example, in Europe with the Champions League in soccer, how important it is as an economic, you know, the money that teams make for being in the Champions League, but also the competitive level and developing the sport. How similar is that with soccer and then basketball in East Asia now?
Yeah, I mean, we make no effort to hide our ambitions, which is to be top three league in the world in terms of fan base size and commercial revenue by 2025, which would be the end of our season three. So I think that's completely achievable. Pretty much everything I say publicly happens eventually, so I'm very confident in that. But at the same time, we strive really to offer a premier product and to elevate the level of the game. And if you look at like what's happened over the since the mid 90s in Europe with taking basketball out of the different country markets and putting it on a regional level for the clubs, now you look at the NBA and it's like one third European. I mean, it's insane. And that's because there's been a tradition over the last 30 years of putting basketball on a regional level. And if we want to see a steady stream of Asian NBA players, and we want to see Asian teams qualifying for the later levels of Olympic competition and taking the podium at the World Cup and whatnot, we have to have an elevated game product that exposes a larger level of players to high level international competition. And that's what East Asia Super League offers. So at the same time, you package it in an entertaining way with all of this 24/7 short form, long form content around it. And that's where we have a very exciting product.
So between now and October, when the season tips off, what will keep you busy most days and most nights, Matt, in preparation for the season?
If I knew the answer to that, then, you know, that would be really, really a great thing for, you know, just workflow as well as maybe general sanity. But no, I mean, like, we've got so much to do, whether it be on an operational perspective or on a, you know, how we set up our editorial calendar for all of our releases that are going out, or, you know, to make sure that we're staying up to date on COVID-19 protocols, or how do we make sure and keep our finances managed in a way that, like, you know, if some unforeseen event happens, that we're able to weather the storm, because we know that we're in the age of a lot of unforeseen events, and all of these types of things. So I would just say that every day is different. But the common thread is that every day is dynamic, and everyone has to think on their toes, and we have to problem solve constantly. So, you know, for me, I think I have a very exciting job, and I think that most of my colleagues would agree from their perspectives. There aren't many boring days at East Asia Super League.
I would hope not.
No.
You know, and from a marketing and promotional standpoint, what is the most important consistent message that needs to be communicated and distributed to fans, potential sponsors, media, anybody who might be interested? What is the most important thing you and your staff need to, you know, always be mentioning?
Terrific together. You know, I mean, none of this works. We're embarking on this thing to put together a basketball product that's pan-regional and hitting an audience of 1.7 billion people. We're projecting 230 million viewers to watch our game broadcasts in season one. And we're also predicting to scale that very aggressively. So, I mean, we have to be together with our partners, and we have to have a terrific result. So, you know, we're always saying terrific together at our company and for everything that we do, and keeping that in mind and being dedicated to that on a day-to-day basis is extremely important for our success. And if our partners are not winning, then we're not winning. Everyone needs to win together.
A couple last really short questions for you here. And if you want to make a closing statement or anything you want to say at the end, feel free to do so. Okay. Couple quick questions. When you played basketball, or when you're playing basketball nowadays, what is the best aspect of your overall game? What skill are you best at in basketball? And who's your favorite player of all time?
Wow. Those are great questions. I would say that if I'm guarding you, you're not really going to be scoring many points. So, you know, I would say that, you know, I'm like, especially in these days, not shooting over 30% from the 3-point line, but I will, I'll make your day miserable if I'm guarding you. So that would be that. I mean, I grew up in the day of really watching a lot of sort of a more physical age of the NBA. And I think, like, for some reason, and immediately when you asked who's my favorite player, Rasheed Wallace, like, came into my head. I mean, I like the attitude. I like being a tough teammate. I like being tough. I like never giving up and, you know, just playing hard throughout one's whole career. And that's what I always saw from Sheed. And there's a lot of other players like him. I mean, in our ecosystem, all of the guys that we have as our player ambassadors play like that. And so I just respect that hustle a lot.
How can people follow the EASL on social media, and what other websites should they know about? Do you want to mention anything about that?
Yeah, well, on Twitter, I mean, this EASL official account is the best way to follow it. We also have Japan and Korea specific Twitter accounts, which we also have for Instagram as well. I would suggest it going on our Twitter, our Instagram, or our Facebook for most up-to-date news. We're in the process of a revamp of our website, and that's going to be awesome. It'll come out a couple weeks before the season starts. So please look forward to that. And, you know, if someone is Chinese proficient and, you know, especially if you're behind the Great Firewall, I would encourage you to get on our Sina Weibo, which has over 500,000 followers and is very dynamic for a China perspective on our business, too.
Looking forward to seeing that new website, the relaunch of it, the new design, the new bells and whistles, and just the way it looks visually. I think currently it's got a lot of updated content already and a lot of interesting mix of stories and, you know, background on the teams and the investment and guys like Shane Battier and Ron Art, Meta World Peace and Baron Davis, how they're involved, Bill Duffy, those kind of things. Any last thoughts you want to share with our listeners, Matt?
I just want to share that I'm really grateful to be here today. You know, anytime I try to do pretty much every interview that I'm requested to do, even if it's not like right away. And so I'm just grateful for Ed, you giving me this opportunity and for the listeners being here and listening. I would just like to say, I think that we're doing something completely different that the sports industry hasn't seen, especially in terms of the merger between traditional sports and then like, you know, wacky entertainment that's very Gen Z and younger millennial focused. And when we see this together with the Asia twist and localization into Chinese, English, Japanese, Korean for everything that we're doing, it's a very exciting ecosystem, but it's also a new and a fragile ecosystem that needs everyone's support and suggestions and patience and understanding as we go through these initial stages. And you know, if anyone has any good ideas, throw them at us and at the team, and there's a good chance we'll implement them because we love ideas and we want to be close to the fans always.
Matt Bayer, thank you for joining us on Sports Talk. We really appreciate it and looking forward to talking to you more during the upcoming inaugural season and following all the teams. It's going to be exciting and it's going to be very interesting. Like you said, it's a fresh new concept for basketball in Asia. And I think it's good from a competitive standpoint for these teams, the Ryukyu Golden Kings, Utsunomiya Brex, for example, to see, you know, in the midst of the regular season, not in the preseason concept, but in the midst of their regular grind to be involved with other teams. It's a progressive and a positive move, I believe.
Awesome. Yeah. I mean, I think it's going to be a lot of fun. So, you know, just have fun together with us and we're making history together.
Again, thank you for joining the program. I hope you have a nice day and look forward to being in touch in the next couple of weeks and months.
Awesome. Thank you very much.